Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello, I'm Martin Kessler. Lady P will not be here for this episode. Don't worry, she'll be back soon. The whereabouts of Master P remain unknown, however. And fortunately, I'm not alone for this episode. I have a veteran podcaster here with me today, a man who's picked my pocket but stolen my heart, Eclipse of Era host David Blakesley. Hello, David.
Oh, hello, Martin. I'm just sitting here contemplating my hands and coming down from my transcendental plane to have a nice conversation with you about Robert Person.
Well, thank you for joining me. So, yeah, today we're going to be discussing two films by Robert Bresson that happen to be sitting next to one another on the Sight and Sound list. Pickpocket, which, as you'd expect, tells the story of a pickpocket on a collision course with jail time, and A Man Escaped, which tells the story of a meticulously planned escape from a German-occupied French prison during the Second World War. And after, we'll close things out with some final notes of positivity, but in the meantime, let's see if these films live up to their place on the Sight and Sound list. So, David, what do you think of A Man Escaped and Pickpocket?
Well, I really appreciate both of these films. Just maybe to introduce myself maybe to listeners who aren't familiar with my work, I've been doing a blog called Criterion Reflections for a number of years, where I kind of listed all the Criterion films in chronological order and kind of worked their way from the earliest up to the recent. I'm in the year 1969 right now. I've gone through the Bresson catalog on Criterion, starting with Les Dames de Bois de Boulogne and Diary of a Country Priest, and then these next two here, The Man Escaped and Pickpocket. And one of the things that was interesting to me is just kind of the order in which Criterion released these films. A Man Escaped, to me, is pretty much the best access point into Bresson. Maybe others have different opinions, and we'll probably talk about his body of work, you know, towards the end or somewhere along the way. But yeah, these films are really the work of a consummate artist. I mean, l'auteur, you know, the auteur himself, Bresson, mm-hmm. I think, has a pretty rightful claim to being the ultimate auteur. I mean, there are others, Dreyer and others out there, who maybe, you know, could give him some good competition. But everything about the auteur theory, that the single visionary artist who realizes every dimension of his film from beginning to end, from the initial conception of the idea to the realization of the mix of sound and picture and editing, all that stuff. And Bresson is it. You know, he's about as refined as they get. And so these two films, I think, are really the pinnacle of his achievements. I'm glad he continued making films, but I think these are the two that represent, you know, his most powerful and effective work to me.
I feel basically the same way. I think A Man Escaped was my entry point to Bresson. It's still my favorite of his. I think Pickpocket gets very close. I don't know if it's maybe something about the moralizing nature of Pickpocket that I sort of prefer A Man Escaped over it, or I don't know. It's hard to beat just the uplifting nature of A Man Escaped's ending. Pickpocket, it's very emotionally powerful, but it's probably more of a down note, I'd say. But it's sort of interesting that these two films come so close on the Sight and Sound list. They're Pickpocket, I think it's 63, and A Man Escaped is 69, which the Sight and Sound list, it can be a little bit funny. I don't know if people ever notice the reoccurring episode numbers of our show, but they're basically next to each other. So I think most people probably do consider these more or less of a piece, with Pickpocket perhaps being a little bit more widely seen. But certain things in the films, because they're made chronologically after one another, it feels a little bit like Bresson playing with ideas from one to the next, or maybe specifically mirroring or juxtaposing certain things. I mean, one's a film about a man heading right towards jail, and the other one's a man escaping a prison. So to me, they do feel like they're a little bit of a mirror of one another. Do you see that?
They're like a complete inversion, you know. In fact, you know, obviously the route to or from jail it pretty much jumps out, but I think even the motives of the characters. I think, you know, for A Man Escaped, you have a man who is, you know, basically being heroic. I mean, he's defying the Nazis. I mean, this is a French film about a man who was part of the resistance. He did not just take things lying down when many of his, you know, countrymen did, or they found ways to cooperate or just kind of lay low when the Nazis came in. Well, there's a man who put his life on the line, and it's based on a true story. It's based on an actual account of a man who went through, you know, the sequence of events, and, you know, maybe a little bit of stylization. We can talk about that too. But, you know, we have a very inspiring story of a man who put his life on the line with single-minded determination, found his way to freedom. Pickpocket, on the other hand, is about a young man who's, you know, presumably very capable of making an honest living and doing things the conventional, morally appropriate, respectable way. He just doesn't feel like he's a little bit of a Bartleby the Scrivener. You know, I prefer not to, you know. And so he gets some kind of a thrill from the act of theft, but it's not like that act of thievery or the sensual, even some would say orgasmic pleasure he gets from it is played up. I mean, he's not a thrill seeker, and you're not vicariously living out this depraved fantasy. It's very subtle, but there's no real motivation as to why he needs to do this. In fact, you know, he's the kind of figure that if you were to meet somebody like him in real life, you'd probably, you know, really be very irritated, if not, you know, very offended by his, yes, his self-centeredness and his lack of conscience, you know. So Bresson himself, I think in one of the supplements on the Pickpocket disc, is interviewed after both of those films had come out. I think it was from 1960, and he himself acknowledges that A Man Escaped connected much more effectively with audiences because people could root for that character, whereas Pickpocket, you know, people are like, who is this guy? I mean, am I supposed to feel sympathy for him? I mean, what is it exactly we're supposed to identify with here? And maybe that's why some of the voters in the Sight and Sound poll, for instance, went with Pickpocket, because it's a little bit more challenging, it's a little bit more, you know, confrontational film. And it's also Bresson's artistry kind of refining itself to just a slightly higher pitch.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you talked about the perhaps stylistic touches that Bresson put on the true story that A Man Escaped was based on. I thought it was interesting that Bresson was also a prisoner of war, and perhaps that informed the film as much as the true story about André de Vigny, who the film is ostensibly based on. Like, I think even if you look at the main actor, François Leterrier, he looks much more like a young Robert Bresson than André de Vigny. I think he was even not a professional actor, because that's what Bresson usually did, use non-professional actors, but he was a philosophy student, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not who you'd expect as a typical man of action. You know, he's sort of an interesting choice, this
man
who maybe evokes introspection.
Yeah, he is. He seems, honestly, even a little bit on the frail side. I mean, he's trim, you know, I wouldn't say. And it looks like he was actually doing his own, you know, climbing stunts in the sections where he's having to suspend himself from ropes and shimmy across a line. So he wasn't like he was in, you know, he wasn't weak or soft, but he's certainly not the, you know, rugged commando, you know, type. Has that, you know, kind of cerebral quality to him, a bookish kind of fellow. But, you know, I don't know what de Vigny actually looked like. Have you seen photos of him at all?
Yeah, he looks like a, like, sort of tough, meaty guy.
And that's what you would expect, you know, a guy from, you know, who's kind of, he's got that singular focus, but he's not this, you know, kind of almost priestly type of character. You know, same with Claude Ledoux in The Diary of a Country Priest. He's got these big, soulful eyes and this, you know, kind of very tender, sensitive spirit about him, you know. But you know, it's a film, and this is, you know, it is interesting. Mm-hmm. Bresson, you know, puts a little, you know, text at the beginning that this is a true story that I've presented without adornment. And, well, maybe he didn't adorn it, but he certainly whittled it down to a core or an essence that I think is you know, probably less than realistic, you know?
Yeah, I thought the same. It's so stripped down. I think reality itself is sometimes more adorned than what the film is, but it does give you this sort of feeling of reality, an impression of reality, like a Man Escaped. I thought it was interesting that the way it sort of gives you a sense of the experience. It's maybe meant to be more experiential than literal, I guess. I sort of feel like after I watch it, almost like I've escaped.
Yeah, oh yeah, you definitely get that sense of you know, being hemmed in and supervised, and you know, you're just moments away from a beating or even an execution if your captors just don't take a liking to you or just decide they're just going to finish this thing up once and for all. So there is a very palpable sense of claustrophobia and you know, disorientation because you know, this guy is in a completely mortal predicament the entire time, especially as he's flouting rules. He's smuggling contraband. He's sneaking his way out of his cell at different portions just to kind of, you know, learn his route and just seeing how far he can press it. And, you know, talking about some of the reality here now, professionally, I work in mental health treatment, and I know a lot about how to run a secure residential facility, you know, and some of the things that were portrayed, it's like, would they really run a jail that loose? I mean, I guess I have to read the account and compare, but it's like when this guy gets a box full of all kinds of stuff towards the end of the film, which was mostly clothing, and they just kind of open it up, they take a little quick peek in there, and they let him go. And it's like, look, I mean, they're gonna sift through every item that he's had and probably not just give him the box itself, you know. So I don't mean that there are some elements there. It's like, well, I'd be interested to find out how he actually got away with some of this stuff, because there are some
Yes.
very simple precautionary steps that the jailkeepers could have taken to really thwart his plans. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But it's a very powerful film and a very it does have that inspiring, that uplift that you mentioned earlier, in terms of how we're on this journey. It is. It's very tense. It's very gripping. It's a, you know, it's a very emotionally engaging film, and that's maybe not something you can say comes as easily as you proceed throughout the rest of Bresson's career.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the main character in Pickpocket, Michel, he seems a little bit like the main character of A Man Escaped with their purpose removed. That there's no objective he can sort of put his meticulous mind, his skill towards. I think there's that line that even the most skilled pickpocket does nothing to contribute to society, which I think is maybe a more interesting perspective than the usual, oh, crime doesn't pay. It's somebody who maybe has a talent and ability and skill that, under the right circumstances, like A Man Escaped, could be very inspiring and very sort of wow, the strength of the patient human spirit. But in this new context, in Pickpocket, it just seems to be something that is oppressive.
Well, and he's victimizing the kind of people who are probably sitting in the audience watching the film, you know.
Sure.
you know, I mean, there may be an element of French society that sympathize with him, maybe certain young people. I mean, you know, we're certainly no strangers in this country or this day and age of kind of outlaw cinema that celebrates kind of the renegade, the criminal, you know, the person
I'm
who's
not
kind of.
gonna lie, I did think it was kind of cool when they had the montage where it showed them practicing all these techniques. I had to
Oh.
try it out myself, putting the watch around the leg
Yeah.
of the table to see if I
Yeah.
could, just out of curiosity, get it off. But no, I think like there is, you know, something appealing about seeing these people do their illegal job well.
Yeah, well,
So,
yeah, the perfection of
yeah.
technique and the, you know, the skill, the subtlety, the sleight of hand is pretty remarkable. And it is. It's there's a very those passages are quite exciting because you're just seeing the flawlessness of the execution there. And it's so nicely framed. I mean, the whole you know, the cinematography, you know, to get into that a little bit, is just so brilliantly executed. I mean, everything is just lit and framed and the displayed. I mean, again, it's a little bit almost show offy, you know, like the ta-da, you know, I got the wallet right there, two fingers slipped in and out, and here's that watch, you know.
Well, most movies that have scenes of a person being pickpocketed, it's usually a trick of the editing. They bump into each other in the next shot, you know, they're holding the wallet. You don't actually see how it's done. So to see the exact process, you know, the hand sort of delicately going in and dropping it and seeing exactly how it's done, that's a little bit rare, actually.
Yeah, it's a form of artistry. It's an illusion. It's a magic show in a
Sure.
way. And actually, there's another nice supplement on the pickpocket disc of Kasagi. He's one of the accomplices
Yes.
that he works with, and he's doing this kind of public thing. It's in a kind of an arena setting, or a nightclub of some sort, and he's literally picking the pockets and stealing the watches of random people in the audience, as well as doing some magic tricks, swallowing razor blades and pulling them out on a string, and just, you know, crazy stuff like that. But I mean, he's quite a brilliant performer, and he was the consultant for all the maneuvers, and that does add some, you know, I'll probably, you know, smite some of Brisson's more ardent fanatics who might be listening, but that does add some theatricality to this film, you know.
Well, like I thought it was sort of funny. I didn't know until I was watching through the Criterion supplements, or maybe it was on the Criterion website, but they talked about Pierre Hertey
Yeah,
was one of the
exactly.
accomplices. You know,
And
that's
there he
somebody
is.
who's very theatrical and does magic tricks, doing what's essentially a magic trick of pickpocketing up there on screen. So, like, I think you're right that there is some theatrical element that, you know, no matter what Brisson says about trying to remove the theatricality from movies, it still sort of shows up anyway.
Yeah, and even if you want to reduce it to a, you know, 3 or 4 minute YouTube clip, that's a very exciting little, you know, passage of cinema there. And you know, Brisson can definitely put that there in his trophy cases as a great, you know, contribution to just, you know, film art.
I mean, for me, Bresson, it's not that he removes all flourishes that makes him great. It's that he knows when to put the flourishes in that I think makes him great, you know, not over relying on music or emotive faces or, you know, trying to substitute scenes of people yelling and screaming for drama. But, you know, the end of Manescape, when the music comes in, it does let you have this incredible rush of emotion. It's very, very powerful. Or Pickpocket at the end, you know, when they finally do have some
That
theatrical idea of an
embrace, yeah.
actor's expression that it embraces, like it's very powerful. So, like, I think it's maybe the balance. I think that where you see his skill come through.
Well, it's the retention. It's holding back. It's kind of a very much a delayed gratification, so that he can open the gates and let the emotion come spilling forth. Again, not in a ham-handed way, because there's still a subtlety. I mean, compared to, you know, countless. I mean, almost every other film that's out there, you know, will spoon feed the emotion more, you know, telegraphed and more deliberately than Bresson does. I mean, Bresson is very deliberate. I mean, he's nothing if
Yes.
not deliberate. But I guess what I'm saying is the emotion is sort of, you know, piped in, you know, consistently. And of course, many audiences appreciate the predictability of that emotional journey towards redemption, where you've got all those points along the way, whereas Brisson will just kind of practice restraint for almost the entire length of the film, and then boom, here it comes in that moment. And it is, it's like a poem. It's like a painting where, you know, you study it, and it draws your eye, and then boom, there's that little moment of revelation. And that's what thrills me about the films of Bresson, is that he's conceived these works so thoroughly, and it's also organic. I mean, he allows things to happen in the filmmaking process so that there is discovery within the making of the film. I think you see some of that. So he has a very clear idea of what he's trying to achieve, but it's not completely fixed at the beginning. As he works with his different elements. And I think, you know, he one of his famous aphorisms is that, you know, this isn't about filming theater, it's more like music or painting. And I think that's exactly what
Yes.
he's doing, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, his approach to actors, it's very, very different than most directors. He,
No,
again, cast
notoriously so, yeah, exactly,
notoriously, perhaps controversially, casting non-actors and often going through many takes to flatten out their performance as much as possible. But it does give it this sort of extraordinary subtlety, I find, that I think some professional actors just can't achieve, you know,
But
they
yeah, well,
yeah.
they've been educated, they've practiced,
Yes.
they've prepared. I mean, you know, especially if you're coming from the theater where you are on a stage and you have to project your voice to hit the balconies and the back rows, and you're one body in an era before you had, you know, screens along the side, you have to gesticulate, you have to move your body so that people in the farther reaches can pick up the emotions that you're projecting. And so, you know, he's annihilating all of that, really. He's almost, you know, condemning or dismissing it or saying that kind of thing has no place in the cinema. And this is where Bresson becomes maybe controversial or divisive,
Yes.
or he becomes a figure that's impossible to completely follow all the way as far as he'd like to be followed. But he does have a dedication to these principles that results in very unique, and I think once you kind of get to that wavelength and become very engaging and involving examples of cinema, it's just he's turning so many conventions on their head that so you have to sort of reckon with, is he right and everybody else wrong, or is he just creating his own little niche within the larger world of cinema, or as he calls it, cinematograph,
Right.
and his, you know, I think he whether he was trying to predict the future of cinematography or there maybe he was just a little full of himself. I don't know, you know.
I mean, that could be a possibility as well. I know other directors have tried similar things often, to great backlash. Like, even reading about Kurosawa not that long ago, in the 70s, he had this idea that he was going to stop working with professional actors and that he would use regular people, much in the same way Bresson would, and it didn't make it very popular. I don't think he ever totally implemented that philosophy because he was trying to do it on the Tora film, which he turned into a fiasco. But
Right, he's trying to work within the American studio system that he's
yes.
never worked within before, a big international blockbuster. This is not the time to test out your auteur theory, you know.
Maybe not, you know, but it did sort of make enemies with actors who had done great work for him, you know, maybe felt a little bit hurt by that. Bresson, I think, obviously didn't work with stars, so he sort of didn't have to worry about hurting their feelings directly. I think there's a moment in the documentary where he says, "I assume stars will be cast without my help." He's not too concerned with that star system, but there's other directors too, I find, will often get better performances out of people who have maybe never acted before than the professional actors. Or I was sort of thought of maybe Terrence Malick sometimes, how the best performance in Days of Heaven for me, it's Linda Banz, who's at that time not acting before and acted little sense, was supposedly never very interested in.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, another idea that came up to my mind is Andrea Arnold's Fish Tank. I think Katie
Right,
Jarvis, the
yes.
young woman who really wasn't acting, she was kind of being herself in a way, and never apparently never seems intent on pursuing a career in acting. And I think Bresson did the same thing. He was looking for people who had a certain essential characteristic about them, and so. His male figures tended to be young, you know, kind of like I said, we talked about earlier, sensitive, solitary types, introspective thinkers, you know, big eyes, kind of soulful expression, you know, kind of had a good look when they kind of cast their eyes downward. And you definitely see, especially in Marika Green and the female lead in Pickpocket, the emerging of the Bresson female, you know. And
Yes.
Leah Zemsky and the young woman who was in Mouchette, I mean, all building on this same kind of idea of this kind of this lean, typically very physically attractive young woman, kind of almost a virginal ideal of femininity. You could tell Bresson probably had his types as far as, you know, female actors or female models were concerned. Forgive me for using the A word there, because that's not what he's. But he is looking for a persona that kind of comes through naturally without the character, without the person being filmed having to somehow transform themselves. And again, you think of, you know, the Oliviers or the other, you know, even
Yes.
or the Orson Welles, where their theatricality is just a magnetic reason why you want to watch them in the first place, is they're so good at what they do, and Bresson will have none of that.
I mean, it's sort of interesting. Instead of getting this sort of wave of non-professional actors in these types of roles, what kind of displaced that traditional style of acting was method acting, where it was actors ostensibly assuming an idea of authenticity. It doesn't quite have the same effect, I don't find. Like, I think method acting does sort of lend itself to a certain style that's maybe re representative of an idea of realism without maybe actually being real life, you know?
Right, it's a technique that's learned, and some do it better than others, and there is a, you know, there's both an entertainment value to it, and there's a way of grabbing and engaging the audience so that they come along for the ride. Bresson just had his own ideas, and he pursued them extremely rigorously, and I think, you know, you sort of have to learn how to take it on his terms, but. You know, I guess this is where I do lose a little bit of patience for people who say, "Oh, he's boring," or "What a snooze fest." You know, it's like, well, you're probably just not trying hard enough. I mean, if you want to consider yourself a serious cinephile, somebody who really is gonna try to explore the wider range of cinema, you know, maybe Bresson isn't maybe as essential in 2017 as maybe he was back in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even to the early 2000s, where you know, he really does represent a certain high point in a particular, you know, evolution of cinema. You know, and that's kind of an interesting. I don't know if we're ready to go there yet, as far as Bresson's enduring legacy. There's still a lot about these two films that we could talk about too.
I mean, I do find it sort of surprising that that seems to be a common criticism or skepticism of his films is that they're boring, because, like, to me, A Manscaped, it's like the most tense escape film I've ever seen. I, you know, you reach the end and I realize I've been holding my breath for I don't know how long, and when I exhale, when they're finally free, it's incredibly tense. Or the, you know, the reactions I get while during the climax of Pickpocket, when you sort of know what's going to happen, that he's going to be caught, and you're just waiting for that handcuff to go around his hand. It's very suspenseful, actually. Tense and suspenseful. I think Bresson, he sort of, I don't know, he almost prepares you for something more boring with those introductions, that the little disclaimers at the beginning of the films, that, like, these are not thrillers, you know, this is a true story presented without adornment. It almost makes you forget that there are sort of exciting film techniques at work in the movie. I don't know if that's part of the illusion too, if that's a little bit of a magic trick saying, like, yeah, this isn't a thriller, and then by the end you feel genuinely thrilled because maybe you're not expecting it. I don't know.
I think you're onto something there. I think Bresson is very, very conscious of both the film that he's delivering and the way it's being delivered, and the role that he and his reputation had. I think, you know, he was a guy who wasn't aiming for big mainstream success, but he was trying to connect with a certain audience, the intelligentsia, if you want to call it that, and he was making movies for them, obviously movies for himself. He's expressing his artistic vision, but he's wanting to make material that really challenges discerning adult viewers and gives them something to dig into. I think even his ellipses, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in this film that are not shown on screen. There's scenes that jump. I mean, even that, and you might even take you a couple of watches to recognize, oh, there's some huge stuff that went on there. And if you're at all distracted, I mean, absolutely shut your phone off, turn everything else off, and watch the movie. But because if you don't, you're going to miss big things. I'll admit, I mean, the first time I didn't realize there was like a 2 year interval in there where he went from Milan to Rome to London. He comes back wearing the same stinking suit, you know? And so if you're at all nodding off or all just kind of out of it for a little bit, you might miss that whole passage and think this all took place over the course of a few weeks, you know? And there, again, some of that illusion has to be suspended, because, you know, when he comes back and he reconnects with Jean, and she's you know, given birth to a baby, and the baby's kind of, you know, not toddling around, but you know, the baby's been around for a few months. Well, she looks about as young and virginal as she did when we first saw her. She doesn't look like a young mother, and her hair's the same. So again, Bresson isn't trying to convince us of the passage of time, but he's putting into certain, and there are many other, you know, less dramatic intervals where things, you know, when he's being followed out of the racetrack, walking on clouds after his first successful theft. And boom, he's sitting in the back of a car being hauled in for questioning. We don't see the arrest. We don't see some of the other traditionally confrontational dramatic moments that other directors would put in there to keep the narrative flowing. And why is Bresson jumping over that? Well, there's things to be discerned and thought through and discovered as we ourselves try to figure out what led to his decision to not show that particular bit there. And that's what makes these
Yes.
films very rewatchable, and they're texts to be studied and lived with and kind of allowed to inhabit us to a certain degree.
I mean, I always find those ellipses very effective at engaging me in a film. I mean, other filmmakers use them well too, but it creates a gap that you have to fill in yourself, so it keeps you from becoming too passive, I find. And both of these films are quite direct. I mean, the plot is the title, basically. So, I think like he does have to work a little bit to keep you engaged and interested in what's happening. Otherwise, it might be too simple. Or sometimes the details that don't really have any significance or bearing are maybe given a special attention to that. I also find very interesting, him noticing the feminine handwriting and the letter he gets in A Man Escaped. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, but it's such a evocative little detail. There are things like that peppered throughout both films. They're not minimalist to the point of, okay, this detail is unimportant, it has to go. I think he does let in or pepper in certain details that give it a kind of texture.
And even his, the shots of empty spaces, hallways or walls where the character moves in for a moment, then moves on, but the shot just sort of stays on that empty space, so it's temporarily occupied and moved on. Or lots of shots of the character sitting on his bed or walking into the room, turning around, sitting down, folding his hands, and kind of gazing off into space, with eyes somewhat lowered. I mean, there's a lot of those types of shots, these moments of kind of contemplation, of kind of allowing the moment to sort of sink in. There's nothing really being said as far as moving the narrative along, and if those scenes were not there, we wouldn't miss them, but they become very much part of the rhythm that Bresson is establishing here of waiting, of kind of mentally rehearsing what's next. Or wondering what's maybe about to happen to them, because these characters both are living kind of on the precipice where, the law or punishment could come crashing down on them at any moment, and yet they can't just buckle underneath that or live in perpetual paralyzing anxiety. They need to keep moving forward and, be prepared for everything just to blow up at any moment.
These aren't what we'd call action films, but they're films about action, people taking action. And I think that's why there's maybe that emphasis on the hands that people usually comment on. I mean, that I'm looking at the Blu-ray covers for the Criterion editions of both films. It's hands on the fronts of both covers. It's like that's the real star. It's not the face, it's the hand.
It is. It is. It's the fingers. It's the gesticulation. It's the manipulation of objects there. I didn't Koganada, the short film artist, didn't he do with the hands of Bresson? I think that's either on
Yeah,
Filmstruck or somewhere on the Criterion site. It's not a supplement on either of these discs, as maybe a web exclusive thing. But that's a very nice little
there's 5 minute
summary.
supercut of all these hands from his films.
Exactly. Yeah. And but you're right. But it is it's that attention to those more subtle details, and the fact that these are films about kind of loner individuals. Bresson is not really, at least not on the surface, trying to connect to larger social themes. I mean, A Man Escaped is of course set in a resistance setting, and so the context, especially in a French audience, is going to be very sympathetic, and I think most viewers nowadays are going to say, "Yeah, we're going to root for the resistance and against the Nazis," right? But he's not really trying to get political as to why, the Nazi occupation was a bad thing, it's not about the political will to restore democracy against National Socialism. It's about getting out of this prison, getting into the open air, so that I can, feel that freedom and escape from the death that they have assigned it to me. with Pickpocket, we're not totally talking about, the problem of juvenile delinquency or of orphaned young men who are having a hard time finding legitimate jobs. This is a guy who's he's alienated and displaced in society for reasons that are never really explored. He just is that way. He's just not feeling connected. His mother dies. Well, that's not a totally unique experience, or and it's upsetting. It's regrettable and sad, but it's not an excuse or a built-in explanation as to why the trauma of losing his mother, sent him off into this life of crime. He's really almost just a bored kid looking for kicks, but it's not even kicks. He's, his pleasures and his rewards are, again, very subtle. There's no, ha, I got the money. Yeah, we're gonna go party now,
Yeah, you don't even really see what they do with all that money. Their
No, right. Well,
places don't look like somebody who's been stealing that much.
right. And early in the film, I guess when he's speaking with Jacques, his friend, and Jacques's like, what are you gonna live on? You do have to make some money, and so I guess there is a bit of an economic motive thrown out there, but it's not really harbored on. And the fact that he goes overseas and kind of makes this international tour, and again, another filmmaker might have shown some gratuitous shots of, some more pickpocket thievery happening in London. Let's do a little street shot in Rome. Let's get in front of the Colosseum and pick some jewels off the neck of some pretty signorinas or something like that. Well, no, that's not Brisson's interest at all.
I mean, he does give it sort of a sensuous quality. The, hand slowly going into the woman's purse does feel a bit
Oh yeah, copping a feel in a
perversite.
sense. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this. I mean, I think thematically, both of these do try to connect to sort of broader ideas of humanity, morality, maybe spirituality. Like Paul Schrader famously put Bresson as one of his examples of the transcendental style of film, which also other examples were Ozu and Dreyer. But I thought it was maybe interesting looking at these ones specifically because on the surface, neither one seems to be a religious film. Like there are Bresson films that are very overt in their religious content. Diary of a Country Priest, of course, or Trial of Joan of Arc, or even Ozar Balthazar, I think, has a certain Jesus allegory going on
Well,
in
yeah,
it.
I mean, his
Yeah.
Catholic spirituality is definitely
Yes.
it's a huge theme in all of his films, certainly all the films that I've seen of his. And again, the reputation is he gets a little darker and a little bit more despairing or cynical towards the end. So, having not gone past Mouchette myself, I don't have a whole lot to say about that. But in these films, I mean, there is definitely that quest for redemption. I mean, the theology is probably never more blatant than it is in Diary of a Country Priest, where there's pretty long dialogues about theological doctrine and grace and repentance and sin and all of that. Here, it's definitely more subdued, and people of various religious or non-religious spiritual persuasions will make of it what they will. But he's clearly, putting in themes of fall and redemption. Of the quest for grace, the fact that we can't always demand or find grace on demand. We can't always just say, okay, I'm just going to do this and everything's going to work out all right. But circumstances and the consequences of our choices sort of weave themselves together in mysterious ways. And then we do perhaps find that moment of redemption. Or, in A Man Escaped, you've got the complication. He's been plotting all this stuff out, he's got everything good to go, but now there's this young kid, this 16-year-old boy who gets thrown into his cell.
Just this
Just.
French boy in a German,
Yeah.
half German uniform.
Right. And that could just mess everything up. Yeah.
A Man Escaped in particular, I think, is very much a film about faith in a way that's very tangible to me. Like, usually films about faith as kind of a general concept are a little bit of a turn off, this idea of believing something even when you have a reason not to. Like, I don't like Life of Pi or stories like that typically, but A Man Escaped, for some reason, it really worked for me. This decision he has to make, whether he should let the boy Jost in on his plan, or if maybe he's there to spy on him and he should kill him. So it takes a literal, act of faith in humanity to bring him along on this escape. And then it turns out that he probably wouldn't have made it over the second wall if it was just him.
Exactly. He
So
makes that point
it,
pretty clear, and that's
yeah.
another punctuation point where you might not catch that the very first time through, but it's a very crucial point that if that boy had not come into his cell, even though it presented a lot of risk to his plans, what if the kid turns him in? What if the kid is a klutz and messes things up as we're trying to escape? Do I have to kill the kid and shut him up the night that I make my escape? I mean, he has some very significant moral decisions that have to be made. But again, it's not like the music swells to this point of like, oh, he's about to make a big decision here. You know, it's like
Right.
it just sort of
It's
happens.
very
And you,
subtle,
yeah.
yeah. Well, and also, like, this idea that you can plan out everything in as much detail as possible, and you still have to take these certain leaps of faith, like at the end when there's the German riding around on the bicycle, and they're hoping he's going to go for a break, but he just doesn't. He goes around all night long, so eventually they just have to risk it. Like, I almost thought of it as like a counterpoint to maybe some of the more cynical Kubrick films about these characters who plan and plan and ultimately fail. Like, it would be interesting to watch maybe a man escape next to The Killing, maybe, which is a film about somebody who plans everything in as much detail and ultimately fails. But that was sort of my takeaway from Bresson's outlook on this meticulous planning, that it's perhaps only to a point.
Yeah, well, anything about the classic heist films, you know, the Rififis and, you know, things of that sort, where, you know, there's the elaborate planning and they demonstrate all that, but then there's that one thing that goes wrong and then they have to adapt. And this actually worked out quite well. And I'm really, you know, obviously happier. And of course, based on a true story, the story was written because the guy was able to escape and he did make it out and he had the tale to tell. But apparently, I think even in the liner notes in the Criterion disc, they said that, you know, there, I think one of the other guy was captured, and there were some other things that happened that didn't get into the final, you know, version of the film. But that point about, you know, discipline and detail and perseverance, as well as that random element that something else happened to allow this whole plot to succeed, whereas it might not have if he had done it entirely in his own wisdom and wiles, which is a very, it's a very Catholic thing that you sort of need that divine intervention, if you will, not so much the hand of God, but just an unexpected element that came into the story and, you know, provided those missing ingredients that your own ingenuity would not have been able to supply itself.
It's sort of interesting looking at how Pickpocket fits into those heist films you mentioned, like Rififi, because at this time in France, there were certain restrictions on films that you couldn't show people getting away with their crimes that ultimately at the end they had to be caught. So I was thinking about how certain filmmakers worked within those parameters, but I don't. I think in the case of Pickpocket, it feels like Bresson genuinely believes the story of the film. It's not like some of these other French crime films where, you know, they get the money and at the very end something has to go wrong, almost as a sort of cruel joke because it's just the rules of the censorship.
Yeah, or it's just kind of you know, kind of a what the hell cynicism. I mean, it's all screwed up the bit
Yes.
anyway, so why bother? I mean, there's a certain fashionable sort of nihilism or resignation, I suppose, that, you know, that's like, you know, you can plan your guts out and it's all going to come crashing down at the end. So, you know, you take it, you take your risk and you enjoy the ride, but don't get your hopes up, you know. Bresson, I think, especially at this stage of his career, certainly wants to, you know, I mean, I think he is of that older generation of artists, perhaps, that feels a sense of what you might even call it noblesse oblige. You know, he's a gifted artist. He's very confident and very aware of his talents, and his job as an artist is to transmit something worthwhile, something of quality, to the people watching. Doesn't mean it's not going to be challenging. It's not going to be sappy or predictable or sentimental, but he has a duty to say this is a substantial work of art, and I'm going to, you know, perhaps leave you with a message that, in maybe in some ways, makes your life better. Whether that's the aesthetics, it's the summons to a kind of being a more morally attuned person, maybe a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more reflective of how you conduct yourself in the world. I think he is trying to, convey something of value to his viewers.
I'm a little bit curious about his where his legacy maybe fits right now. I mean, this is sort
Yeah.
of the lead into the final question,
Sure,
but
yeah. I think his reputation might be broadly on the decline because he doesn't necessarily make films that are going to be as appealing to young people. I don't say that disparagingly at all. I just feel like, he's an artist of a certain generation. I'm 55 years old, so I think I'm a little bit more on his wavelength, even as a man who's, somewhat older and has lived some life and all of that. So maybe he's a filmmaker who might be appreciated as viewers begin to age themselves. Or viewers who are really steeped in the tradition of European art house cinema and really appreciate it on that level. I'm not saying a young person can't enjoy this, but I'm not sure there's as many of them, perhaps, as maybe there once were. And there's so many other directions that one can go in appreciating and studying and just learning about cinema. I don't know that Bresson is the same kind of giant that maybe he was previous generation or two. And so there may be fewer people who will be drawn to his films or feel maybe the same sense of obligation that, oh, of course, Bresson, we must respect Bresson, and that may be where a little bit of some of that backlash comes in because, O Hasard Baltazar, I actually had a little bit more of a critical take on that movie, and I think it's basically a backlash, if you will, about some of the glowing praise and reputation. Like, this is such an exalted masterpiece. And it's like, well, it's about a donkey who gets abused and lays down and dies. So you can sort of have that piss take on it, if you will, and kind of tweak your elders and say, yeah, it's not all it's cracked up to be. And so that is there. And like I said earlier, Bresson maybe is a little bit full of himself. I mean, there is a certain seriousness about him that is like, oh,
He's a
come on.
very self-serious
Yes,
artist,
yeah.
filmmaker,
Yeah,
yes.
give me a break, lighten up,
Oh
dude.
my God. And listeners, would you like a completely pointless name drop story?
Sure.
In the early 80s, my father met Robert Bresson, and my father's not a film person. So you know what they talked about? Learning English. Nothing film related. So like one degree of separation removed, and I got nothing.
That's pretty cool, though. But it's a reminder that I think as much as Bresson was about his films, I think he was about a lot of other things. He lived a very long life. I think he was like born in what, 1901, and died in 1999. So I mean, a true 20th century man is. But he only made like what, 13 feature films over the course of like a 50-year career. So, I've got him in the background when he's reading Dostoevsky, he's a man of the arts. He's about the literature, he's about the painting. Apparently, he was a pretty good painter too. But in one of the quotes here, it's like, I like painting, I love it, but nobody sees my work. But I think he recognized that cinema was a way to get his work out there, and he had a unique gift and talent for it, and he made films that are distinctively, instantly recognizable as Bressonian. If you've seen one or two of his films, you see another one or two. After that, you're going to recognize, oh yeah, this is the same hand. No pun seriously intended there, but this is the same hand that created those other ones. Whether you start with Balthazar or A Man Escaped or wherever, I've kind of followed him up chronologically, and so that's been an interesting journey. And like I say, these are my two favorite. I think with Balthazar and Mouchette. And there's also, I kind of stirred up a little ruckus in a Facebook movie group a year or two ago by saying, yeah, there's a little bit of the creepy factor as he started fawning over these young women a little bit as he's aging and he's.
Mouchette,
And
yeah, I
Mouchette,
can see
yeah.
that, yeah.
And it's just kind of like, okay, let's back off now, bub. It's, but at the same time, he drew forth some very evocative performances, and those are very moving films, but it's just. Maybe I like it just when he's focusing more on male protagonists than female. I'll put it that way.
So do you think these two, A Man Escaped and Pickpocket, are they worthy of their 63rd and 69th spots on the Sight and Sound list?
I certainly think Bresson is important enough that he belongs in that neighborhood. How high was Balthasar? Do you
I
remember?
think Balthasar's way up high. It's number 16.
Wow. See, to me,
Yeah.
that's way overrated
Yeah,
there. Yeah. And so if you're going through the Sight and Sound list and then you're in that territory and you put Balthasar up there, yeah, I can definitely see where that film feels like it needs to be taken down a few pegs. But I think these films are pretty appropriately placed there. He's unique. He's a certain, there's a flavor there that is not maybe your mainstream stuff, but once you like it, you find it's very invigorating and very satisfying. So I think we're in good territory here.
I'm always a little bit curious when you have these filmmakers whose films are maybe splitting votes a little bit. Like
Oh yeah.
if people decided to back one of them, if it was A Manuscript or Pickpocket, it would be considerably higher. But I sort of like that these two are together on there together. I mean, you could argue that maybe it's taking up a spot from some other filmmaker who's not on the list, but they do seem to be of a pair enough that it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, and I think really, I really appreciate that you put this into one episode. I mean, you could have done one episode on each film, and like I said, there's probably plenty to say. But I think combining the two and putting them there side by side, and for me, watching them back to back like that, because like I say, I had to have sort of spread them out because there were a few years between these films. But to really see how they are almost kind of mirror images or inversions of each other is really fascinating, and definitely just reinforced my opinion that these are. Maybe you do need to take them both in. I mean, A Manuscript is like 1.5 hours, and Pickpocket's 1 hour and 15 minutes.
70 something
Yeah.
minutes, yeah.
So it's like you kind of watch them back to back in one evening, and really kind of get a little something out of the compare and contrast between the two.
All right, so now that we're free of our German captors, how about some final notes of positivity? David, what do you have?
Well, I just went on a vacation. My wife and I went out west on vacation, out to the national parks and canyon lands of Utah and Arizona. We had a kind of a whirlwind tour of Arches National Park and Zion and Bryce Canyon and Grand Canyon, and it was a pretty eventful week, and we really had a fantastic time out there, capped by stops in Vegas both the first night and the last night. So, kind of saw the glitter and glamour of Las Vegas and all the craziness on the strip there, and then just got out into these really incredible wilderness areas, which I know are popular tourist destinations, and I'm sure many listeners have been there. But if you haven't, man, I just kind of recommend you make this journey to see some extraordinary country. But the note of positivity isn't just the scenic beauty, but I just really, again, I hope it doesn't sound like too much of a dilettante here, but just being out in this country and having some conversations with some native people that were out there, some of our tour guides and people who walked us through some canyons, and just thinking about the native culture, the native Indian culture of the southwestern United States, and these really, I'll just say, sacred lands that these people have been living in for centuries, if not millennia, and the culture that's grown up around that's really gotten me just really thinking a lot more about the Native American experience, the displacement that they suffered. And this is not new story, and certainly nothing that I am not, have not been aware of, but just the experience of being out there and really seeing for myself. The beauty and the majesty, and again, I'll use the word sacredness of this landscape, and the people who have been preserving it, and now how it's been kind of commercialized and exploited, and their rights have been compromised. So I'm reading a book. I actually it's still on order called Native American Testimony, which is a kind of a historical account. I was actually reading it a bit in one of the gift shops at the Grand Canyon, and so I got to get me a copy of this book. So it's just the story of the North American history from the Native American point of view, and even though I love my movies and all that, it's just really nice to get out into nature and to really really gaze deeply into some of these landscapes and to think about the culture that developed in those places that hasn't necessarily been all that well captured on film. But I do want to start looking at some seeing if there are some good cinematic documents of that culture and of that scene.
That's fantastic. You always have the best final notes of positivity. Mine is the death of King Louis the 14th, the new Albert Serra film with Jean-Pierre Léaud. And I saw it not long ago. We covered La Mama et la Poutine on Flixwise, which had Jean-Pierre Léaud, and saw this shortly after, and it didn't totally sink in right away, but the more I think about it, the more it's a film I feel like people should see. Serra, he's sort of doing maybe the same thing he's been doing with his past couple of films, Story of My Death and the Don Quixote film and the Three Kings film, but something about seeing Jean-Pierre Léaud, the little boy from 400 Blows, playing a person convincingly at the end of their life, I found very powerful. And I sort of thought that maybe there's commentary about certain ideas of what cinema should be that came out of the 1950s that are perhaps reaching their end of their life that the film is reflecting on. So I thought it was a really interesting, rewarding, powerful film that I'd recommend people check out.
Yeah, that's even an interesting kind of you know, thought feeding into the films that we've just been discussing, as Brissolin, mm-hmm. a quintessential director of the 50s and into the 60s, and obviously all the way up to the early 80s with his final film. But, you know, that it is, it's been such a defining kind of core movement in cinema, but yet cinema is so much more than even the Nouvelle Vague and all the things that grew out of it. As huge as that was, it's a truly global art form. And I think we're just now, or maybe not just now, but, you know, we're increasingly becoming aware, like the World Cinema Project, the big box set that Criterion just released, just really taking it in from all corners of the earth. I think that's a mm-hmm. pretty cool thought. I'll definitely look into that as well.
So if folks want to find you on the internet, where could they look?
I do all my stuff through CriterionCast.com. That's where I publish my reviews, my podcasts. I am, as you said, the host of the Eclipse Viewer. That's a program where Trevor Barrett and I have gone through all the different sets of the Eclipse series, Criterion's seemingly at an end DVD sideline of
that's kind too
of,
bad.
It is too bad. I mean, Filmstruck obviously fills that void in terms of films that may not quite warrant individual releases, and Filmstruck is a great resource for those fortunate enough to have it. I know it's not available, you know, overseas or outside the USA right now, and that's a drag, you know, because the Eclipse series definitely has that, filled that niche for people in other parts of the world. But we only have one more Eclipse set to go. It's the late Ozu set, and so Trevor Barrett and I have been kind of planning that, and I do have other projects that I have in mind once that series kind of reaches a conclusion, Yeah, so find me at CriterionCast.com. That's where I do my thing.
That's a good one to go out on. Like, I love, I think it's late autumn, really any color Ozu film.
Yeah.
I really love.
Yeah, those last five. I think late autumn is in there, the end of summer, Equinox yeah. Flower, his three colors other than An Autumn Afternoon, and what's the other one?
I think those are some of his best Floating films, Weed. Maybe. Anyway, I'll be looking forward to listening to that.
Yeah, thank you.
And if folks want to follow the show, it's... you can check us out on Twitter at Flixwise or on Facebook. We're on iTunes, where you can feel free to rate and review. If folks want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Movie Kessler. And until next time, be free, listeners. Be free.